a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning and welcome to the Senate Taxation Committee. Welcome to everyone who's listening on the Internet. Just a reminder that if you have a cell phone, to turn off your cell phone. And if you plan on testifying this morning, we'll have you sign in. And with that, we'll have the Secretary call the roll.
Ewing?
Here.
Kirkby?
Here.
Amdahl?
Here.
Otten?
Here.
Wilkie?
Here.
Monroe?
Here.
Maher?
Here.
Everyone's present.
We have a quorum, so we can start. Before we get started, do we have a motion to approve minutes from the last meeting? So move a motion by Wilkie, second by Ewing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are so approved. And with that, I believe we can go. Just for note, Senate Bill 199 will be deferred until the, when is that, the 11th, which is next Monday. But we'll take any testimony if there's anybody here from out of town on Senate Bill 199. But we'll get started with Senate Bill 121, an act to repeal certain provisions relating to the Commission on Intergovernmental Cooperations and authorize state membership to the Council of State Governments. Good morning, Senator Peters.
Good morning, Senator Maher and committee. I don't know if I've ever been to the tax committee before, so this is kind of fun. I'm Senator Deb Peters. I represent District 9, which is Hartford, Humboldt, Wall Lake, and the northwest corner of Sioux Falls. And I brought Senate Bill 121 as another effort on my part and the part of the governor's office, I believe, to repeal language and old outdated statutes and things that we no longer need. Last Thursday, I pitched a bill in Senate Appropriations that got rid of the Multi-State Tax Commission, which is a group that's out in the federal or out in the different states and is something that South Dakota no longer relies upon. Senate Bill 121 is a similar bill, and it is a bill that repeals the Commission on Intergovernmental Commissions while still allowing the state to be a member of the Council of State Governments. But from what was determined when we were doing the research, this commission's duty was to coordinate the membership of the legislature in various regional and national government organizations and to provide a summarizing report at the end of the year of what occurred at these particular meetings. The commission hasn't actually been a functional commission in well over 30 years. As any of the legislators that are aware, we have an executive board where we elect our leadership in our caucuses at the end of the session. And that the executive board, as you all know, coordinates our legislative participation in a lot of different organizations as far as national and state task forces, summer studies, and any other national or regional meeting type things. So they approve our travel, and the executive board goes through and monitors our legislative budgets and things like that. So, but during our research, it was not determined on whether the South Dakota Codified Law 2-9-25 is used to authorize the membership of the Council of State Governments or whether it is necessary to have a statute to actually authorize it. So there is a section in this bill that does just keep it in there just to make sure that we keep the status quo and not to really mess up anything if there's anything else in code. But anyway, with that, I just appreciate your favorable support on Senate Bill 121 and stand by for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Are there further proponents to Senate Bill 121? Any further proponents to Senate Bill 121? Seeing none, are there opponents to Senate Bill 121? Good morning, sir.
Well, thank you, Chairman and members of the Tax Committee. I know that this is my first time I address this committee.
Oh, can you turn the little button on your... There we go.
Now you can hear me?
There we go.
Okay, my name is Steve Simpson. I traveled up here from Mitchell, South Dakota this morning to provide you some research on the Council of State Government. And I do have some handouts that contains that research.
Can the page come forward and distribute that for us?
Thank you for your help. I also have my research available for the sponsor, Senator Peters.
That's fine. I'll take it later.
All right. Thank you. Basically, the three handouts I'm providing you, the first one is a 20-some page one that I did a couple years ago when Mitchell was looking at a city manager appointed position, and I started doing research on the history of the city manager, and I ran across a lot of stuff, so I consolidated it onto 20 pages, And I'm not going to cover all that, but I had extra copies left over from 2 years ago, so I thought I'd go ahead and bring them, and I will touch on certain pages. The second document is a four-page that I found last week that's more directly involves this legislation that we're looking at this morning. So I'll be spending quite a bit of time on that document. And the third one is simply a book that Hidman wrote that kind of supports some of the points that she wrote in that four-page column. Again, the reason why I start researching the Council of State Government, because my senator, Senator Mike Valley from my district, talked a lot about going to conferences. And by the way, I did run against Senator Valley a couple of times in law, so I'd like to congratulate all you who have ran campaigns and won and are here today. I totally respect the amount of effort it comes to be a senator, and I want my testimony this morning to be simply research that I found. I do not mean to pass judgment on any legislator here in South Dakota. I want to just simply provide research that points to what some of us see as a problem, and let you make your own judgment about if this pertains to what's going on here in South Dakota. And with that said, if you have the research in front of you, I'm going to start with the large one on page one. It talks about what is the Council of State Government, and it's one of the organizations collectively known as 1313. 1313 is at once an idea, a movement, and a clearinghouse address. The term is applied to the complex by its own people and is used to designate 22 separate organizations with heavily interlocking officers, directors, and trustees, all headquartered in a building erected to house them at 1313 East 60th Street in Chicago. The building is located on land provided by the University of Chicago and was built with funds given for its purpose by the Rockefellers. There's another point in the research I provided that says that Rockefellers conditioned their money on Henry W. Toll to become its director of the Council of State Governments. I also found that Mr. Toll was a member of some kind of World Citizen Association. I also want to point out that David Rockefeller, in his 2003 book, talked about how his family has been accused for inordinate influence on our American political and economic institutions, and he quoted the saying, characterizing my family and me as internationalist and conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure, a one world, if you will. If that is the charge, I stand guilty, and I'm proud of it. With that said, I will touch on page one of the large research as to the purpose of Metro 1313. That is to remove local control from the people and place it into the hands of appointed experts and managers. Now, if you go to page 19 on that large piece of research, you'll find the aims of the Metro 1313 complex. The first one is geopolitical merging. This is merging the city with the county, the counties with districts. And I think 1970s, former Governor Farrar set up 6 planning districts in South Dakota that kind of consolidates the colonies into that planning district. So that's one thing that happened with this statute, is provide South Dakota with those 6 planning districts. There's district and state point three, and then there's state region consolidation. This is what South Dakota belongs to, the Midwest region of the Council of State Governments. And I want to point out that region also contains 4 Canadian provinces. So it is international in nature, the Council of State Governments. The second point that Metro 1313 does is destroys check and balance government. That's the division of powers between the legislative, executive, and judicial. And just on Thursday afternoon on the House floor, where they're debating Senate Bill 70, the prison reform bill, the majority leader stated that the legislatures are not really able to craft such legislation, and instead the criminal justice branch and the executive branch are the stakeholders and should draft the legislation. And that kind of proves to me that this is a valid point, that we have destroyed the check and balance system. And one representative on the House floor said that means that the legislature is simply a rubber stamp for the rulers of what's going on in this nation. And they do rule by appointments. That's point three. And point four is the elimination of states and sovereign states' rights. Basically, that point is being made. That point is being done through federal money. If you look back, and not too long ago, the federal government paid South Dakota less than what we paid our government through the general fund. Now the federal government provides us a lot more money than the general fund, and it's approaching almost double. And the argument is that the more federal money we get as a percentage of the total government in South Dakota, the less rights we have as a state. And I think it's a valid concept. And then there's this collectivist concept, which I will pound on with the second handout. Before I do that, though, on page 17, it states that Metro 1313 has two co-leaders, the Council of State Governments, of course, and the Public Administration Service. That's due to this collectivist cluster. CSG controls the political and judicial divisions of 1313, while the PAS promotes economic metro. I'm not going to get into the economics part of this. That's what a lot of that large document, the first document, talks about. So I'm going to address my testimony specific to CSG and its political role. And with that, I'm going to move to the second document that I gave you, done by Joel Hinman, called 1313's Mail Order Laws, with the subtitle, We Are Letting Collectivists Take Over Our Government Through Planted Legislation. Hinman begins her column by explaining there is a law factory in Chicago. Now, the Council of State Governments is no longer in Chicago as of the time of her writing. It has been moved to Kentucky. The legislation is engineered to rob millions of Americans of their freedoms. Legislators who lack judgment or intentionally collaborate are betraying their constituents, according to Hinman. In the sixth paragraph of that beginning of her column, she says that CSG was swaddled in New Deal blankets and placed on the doorsteps of America in the 30s. States hold membership in the CSG, uses taxpayers' dollars to pay dues, just to take orders written up in the model, in the form of model and uniform state laws. On page three of her column and writing in column two is also mentioned on page 18 of the first packet of information I gave you. On page 18, it says the 1313's Council of State Government describes itself as an agency created by the states. Not true. Remember, Rockefeller contributed $40,000 in 1930. And from 1933 to 1936, the CSG was merely a title on a letterhead. In 1936, the state of New Jersey passed 1313 fabricated law that established the New Jersey Commission and Interstate Cooperation joining CSG. This gave 1313 Council the start it needed. The New Jersey Secretary of State memorialized or notified the other states that New Jersey had joined CSG. Each state that joined thereafter usually memorialized the remaining non-joining states. This practice memorialized hastened the CSG propagation. Now, if you look at our statute 2925, which this bill is going to remove, it was enacted in 1939, 3 years after the New Jersey Act. And it's almost word for word from the New Jersey Act. If you look at Hinman's page 3, column 3, or column 2, toward the bottom, is almost word for word. So this is an example of the granddaddy of states working in concert, passing the very same legislation. It's called the factory laws being pushed down the states, and the legislatures pass them. And Hinman says in the 1974 book, which I gave you excerpts from, that CSG maintains close liaison with 50 bastions called interstate or intergovernmental commissions, amazingly legalized by the 50 state legislatures. Each of the 1313 outposts operates as a gremlin government shadowing the legitimate constitutional state government. Additionally, each state stands the cost of maintaining the Council of State Governments office within its own state government. That's basically what statutes 2925 through 29 has done, and I agree with removing those statutes. My problem is with the last article saying that we should continue to be a member of the Council of State Governments. Yes, Senator Chairman.
The sponsor has passed out an amendment to strike the sections you were concerned about.
Okay, completely?
Yes.
All right. So how do you want me to proceed? You want me to continue to inform you people?
Just give a little summary of the last handout you have, and then we'll move on.
Okay. Well, thank you for the direction, Chairman. Okay. I will do that. Basically, I will go right to my closed paragraph.
Sure, just fine.
Himmons' recommendation for fixing this problem is the correcting state can be taken simply by withholding state funds from the Council of State Government for the more wealthy and the more powerful CSG grows, the worse it will become the plight of government that rightfully belongs to the American citizens. Check to learn what your state is paying the Council of State Governments. So I've done that. If you look at the handout, in 1961, South Dakota paid the Council of State Governments $3,600. I went to the open government database, and last year, South Dakota paid the Council of State Government $115,378.30. I also found on the Internet an LRC board meeting on April 18, 2011, where Mr. Jim Fry says South Dakota pays dues not only to the Council of State Government, but also the National Conference of State Legislators, the Economic Commission of the States, and the Uniform Laws Commission. So when I'm saying that we need to stop funding the Council of State Governments, my proposal amendment would leave Article 6 in and not strike it, but change the two mays to shall not. And I would also contend that we should probably add other organizations to that list besides the Council of State Governments, such as the National Conference of State Legislatures, the National Governors Association, the American Legislative Exchange Council. All those things do the same purposes. So that's why I oppose the legislation as written, and I've given you what I think needs to be done to change it. I will stand by for any questions from our research chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your indulgence.
Yes. Are there further opponents to Senate Bill 121? Any further opponents to Senate Bill 121? Seeing none, we'll move into a quick rebuttal. Senator Peters?
Absolutely. Well, I apologize for the committee and to the opponent. I didn't realize he would drive all the way from Mitchell. This bill I brought, 121, is truly a simple bill. I did not mean to stir the hornet's nest with CSG or any of the other national organizations that South Dakota works with. Senate Bill 121 is simply a bill that repeals the commission that deals with the oversight of how the legislature has dealt with membership organizations in the past. This bill simply repeals all of the language dealing with a commission that has not been used in over 30 years. We've been using the executive board as the procedure in which we deal with this. We as caucus members elect people to make those decisions on our behalf in order to whether we're going to be a member or not a member of those organizations. And so with that, I did pass out an amendment that strikes out any inclusion of CSG. I don't think it's necessary. None of the research that we've done in this bill shows that it's necessary. I had the amendment drafted up prior to because I thought maybe it would be a question on whether it was necessary or not. Obviously, it's up to you guys as the committee to hopefully either put the amendment on or not put the amendment on, but please pass the bill out, Senate Bill 121, to continue the getting rid of old statutes that really don't pertain to how we do business in the legislature any longer. So with that, I'll stand by for additional questions. Thanks, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions of the committee? We'll move into for Senator Welkie is.
I guess I'm kind of confused on it, but this is not a statement in any way against, in some cases, cooperating with other states, entering into an interstate compact to take care of radioactive waste or, you know, whatever type of situation may merit us to work together with our neighbors.
Mr. Chair, if I can answer. This is in no way, shape, or form a statement to stop interstate compacts between other states. This is only to clean, it's only cleanup language, getting rid of practice that they used back 30, 40, 50 years ago in dealing with legislative member organizations. The current practice today is the executive board. We as caucuses, whether it's the Democrat House, the Democrat Senate, the House Republican Caucus or the Senate Republican Caucus, we go through leadership elections. It'll be at the end of this session. It's usually the last week of the session. And we elect our members to an executive board. That executive board then decides who participates, what we participate in, and how we participate. And they run the business of the legislature. So this is strictly striking old language that is no longer necessary. It is not a statement to get us out of working with other compacts. We have well over 100 to 200 compacts with other states dealing from all variety of issues from military to unemployment to you name it. So it has no statements against that. I hope that answers your question.
Any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, we'll move into committee action and or discussion, and we have remind you that we have an amendment before you.
Chairman.
Senator Monroe.
I'd like to move Amendment 121 UA.
We have a motion to amend. Do I have a second? Seconded by Omdahl, or Otten, I mean. You can't set those two O's together. Motion, all those in, this is a voice vote. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate Bill 121 has been amended. Any further discussion on the bill as amended? Seeing none, do we have action on Senate Bill 121? Senator Monroe.
I move due pass as amended.
Do I have a second on the due pass motion? Seconded by Otten. Any discussion to that motion, gentlemen? Any other discussion? Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I think she's made a bill that didn't work into a really good bill.
Thank you. With that, will the Secretary call the roll? All those in favor will say aye, and those opposed will say nay.
Ewing?
Aye.
Kirkaby?
Aye.
Omdahl?
Aye.
Okay.
Otten?
All right.
Aye.
Welke?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Senate Bill 121 has received a vote of 7-0, so we'll move to the floor. However, before we do that, we need a title amendment. And, nope, that's fine. Monroe, want to move this title amendment? We need to strike these words after cooperation.
Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Senator Monroe.
I move we alter the title and strike out everything after the word cooperation.
Do I have a second on the title amendment?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Kirkaby. Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate Bill 121 has a title amendment. Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we make a motion to move this to consent?
We can. Motion by Ewing, seconded by Kirkaby. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, Senate Bill 121 moves to the Senate floor on the consent calendar. And we do have a few minutes. I don't see Senator Brown yet. Senate Bill 199, is there anybody here to testify on Senate Bill 199, being we are going to defer that until Monday? All right. I never introduced the pages earlier. Would you want to come forward to the microphone and tell us your name and where you're from and what you plan on doing after the high school?
My name's Reagan Arnoldy. I'm from Kennebec, South Dakota. And after high school, I plan on attending the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and majoring in speech pathology.
Well, great. Welcome. Hope you enjoy. This is your first day of your two-week cycle. Okay,
yep.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm Katie Roth, and I'm from Sturgis, and after high school, I plan to attend the University of Minnesota Twin Cities to study law.
Thank you. Great. We have some students in the back. You want to stand up and tell us where you're from? Okay.
I'm Deanna Fishbach. I'm the high school government teacher at Faith High School. I brought with me today 23 seniors from Faith. I have half of them in this committee.
All right. Great. Well, we've got a few minutes. before Senator Brown shows up, do you have any questions so far for us? You got a whole panel. I'm going to open this up right now. Do you have any questions for us while we kill 5 minutes before Senator Brown shows up?
Everybody at that side of the table, what's the question? Over there.
That doesn't mean we can answer them.
We can ask them questions, too. You want a question for Faith? There he is. All right. There's Senator Brown. Come forward. We'll open up commit testimony on Senate Joint Resolution Number 2, proposing and submitting to the electors at the next general election an amendment to Article, is that 11, Section 13 and 14, and it goes on, for this Constitution of the State of South Dakota regarding the vote required to increase taxes. Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, after I introduced this bill, it was pointed out to me that there could be some clarification with the way it's worded. So I do have an amendment that I'd like to distribute and speak to the amendment in the bill.
Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. The amendment that you see being distributed essentially just reorganizes the numbering of the sections so that, and you'll see why when I speak to this, that probably makes a little bit of sense to do that, but essentially the substance of the bill doesn't really change with this amendment. It's simply the amendment is kind of more of a reorganizing effort. What I would like to do is just take you back in history to begin with. If you go back to 1996, there was an amendment that was offered to the citizens of this state for the Constitution, and that amendment essentially required a two-thirds vote of the legislature for any new tax. If there was going to be a tax that was imposed, it would require a two-thirds vote of the legislature. My understanding is the feeling at that time was that, especially when we're taking dollars away from the citizens to be used for the government, there probably needed to be a little higher level of scrutiny to accomplish that. And so, therefore, this two-thirds amendment was offered to the people of the state. And they overwhelmingly accepted it. The vote was 74.3% in favor of Constitutional Amendment B in 1996. During my time here in the legislature, I've had the opportunity to witness what I might call some loopholes or flaws with that original proposal. One of those being what I call the sunset loophole. Essentially, if a tax was passed for a defined period of time, so let's say that we decided to pass a tax this year and we could put a time limit on and say that we're only going to impose that tax for 2 years, it would require a two-thirds vote for us to pass that tax. However, when you get 2 years down the road, and there's disagreement on this, but essentially in the past it's been ruled that in order to get rid of that sunset, it would only take a majority vote of the legislature to do that. I probably fall on the other side of the camp where I see that as imposing a tax that wasn't supposed to be there 2 years after that had sunsetted. This year, we put in place what I call a temporary fix, and we changed the rules for the House and the Senate to require a two-thirds vote if ever a sunset was removed or repealed or a tax was extended beyond what it was originally passed for. That really is only, as I indicated, kind of a temporary fix. As you know, the rules could be changed at any point prior to the legislative session beginning with only a majority vote. So therefore, I'm not confident that that really fixes the issue, but I felt like it was a good Band-Aid for the current year and for next year until we could do this. So one of the first things that this constitutional amendment does is it closes that loophole, and it requires a two-thirds vote if you ever have a tax that was set for a predetermined time. In order to extend that beyond that original sunset, it would take a two-thirds vote. That's the first big thing that this does. The second thing that this amendment seeks to do is create some consistency. You know, as we saw back in 96, nearly 75% of the voters thought that there should be a higher level of scrutiny on the part of the legislature if a tax was ever going to be passed. This would put that same level of scrutiny if ever there is an initiated measure that seeks to raise a tax. So it would require a two-thirds vote of the people as well. The last thing that this particular amendment does, and this is kind of a safeguard that I've tried to put in place here, and that's why you'll see that the amendment that I offered to you, it essentially requires a two-thirds vote if this section of the Constitution is ever going to be changed. Without that, I think it would be pretty possible to just run an amendment to strike the two-thirds and then turn around and have an initiated measure that would raise a tax, and essentially all of this would be for naught. So it would raise the level of expectation in order to change these provisions to a two-thirds vote. Essentially, those are the three things that I've set out to do with this particular amendment. Not that I need to for this committee, but maybe for folks that might be listening, I would remind them that, you know, obviously something like this has to go through the legislature and then would have to be adopted by a vote of the people at the next general election, which would be 2 years from now. Because of that, it seems to me that we are certainly offering the citizens of this state a chance to express their opinion on this one way or the other. And without the amendment, we would not be doing that. But I'll certainly stand around for any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Are there further proponents to Senate Bill or Senate Joint Resolution number 2? Further proponents? Good morning, Mr. Lyons.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Sean Lyons, South Dakota Retailer Association. I think Senator Brown did a great job of explaining his proposal. And, you know, just a little bit of history, obviously, and as I've shared with this committee before, our association does take a very pragmatic view when it comes to increasing taxes. And we were part of the coalition of groups back in 1996 that brought that constitutional amendment that was passed by the voters, the Coalition for Responsible Taxation. Actually, the group used to be called the No New Taxes Group, and since then that group has kind of evolved in terms of our view of not being necessarily anti-tax, as I've tried to share with you all before, but the fact that you do have to take a step back and really consider not just a simple majority when it comes to increasing taxes in this state, and the legislature obviously adheres to that policy now. But we think the voters, too, should be the same way. Obviously, if you look back at what happened this past November with the sales tax proposal that was on the ballot, a simple majority simply could have done that increase for just two particular groups. And obviously, our organization had some concerns with that, and there were a number of others as well. I think if you look at Senator Brown's proposal that you have before you today, the same thing ought to hold true. We need to be very cautious about how we look at increasing any taxes in the state, and the fact that the voters should be more than just a simple majority. It ought to be a clear two-thirds when it comes to increasing any taxes and being pragmatic about that approach. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lyons. Are there further proponents to Senate Joint Resolution number 2? Good morning, Mr. Doherty.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tim Doherty. I'm a registered lobbyist for the Licensed Beverage Dealers in South Dakota. And like Mr. Lyons' organization, Retailers, our organization was one of the founding members of the coalition that initiated the change in the Constitution in 1996. And we think that this proposed resolution is the next step and the right thing to do for the taxpayers of South Dakota, and we urge you to support this.
Thank you. Further proponents? Good morning, Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Nancy Johnson with the South Dakota Beer Distributors Association. And as an entity that represents statewide businesses, we become very concerned about cross-border activity. And although it's seems minimal to raise a tax a penny, as we just discussed this last fall, the implications for businesses on the borders are significant. As an example, on a barrel of beer in South Dakota, we tax $8.50. In Wyoming, we tax 62 cents. That's very, very significant when you look at a product with a small margin. When we are able to talk with 105 policymakers, we are able to communicate that information, and you're able to make informed decisions that affect businesses. Trying to do that with a broad base is extremely difficult and, quite honestly, extremely expensive. When we go to a two-thirds requirement for you, we should have that same requirement for your constituents. Be happy to stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Further proponents to Senate Joint Resolution number 2? Further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Joint Resolution number 2? Opponent testimony to Senate Joint Resolution number 2? Seeing none, we will move into committee questioning. Are there any questions of the committee? Senator Wilkie.
I can certainly understand, you know, why we maybe want this. I am concerned that it sure appears to me to not be very democratic. And you're taking away the rights of the people. 66% of the people vote for this, it will fail. So what we're really doing is creating somewhat of a majority rule. My question for you is, you're okay with that?
Senator.
Well, you know, our entire society has been based on majority rule, so I'm not really sure that this changes that. You know, what I would point out, Senator Wilkie, is this concept is not anything new. I know that you've been in the education field. Anytime a bond gets issued for a school, that level of scrutiny is higher. We use a 60% threshold in that case. So I think in terms of consistency, the state has already adopted that general philosophy that if it's going to take additional dollars out of someone's pocket, there's probably going to be a higher threshold. The reason I've opted for the two-thirds in this language is to keep it consistent with what the voters originally asked for in 1996, and so that we don't have a dichotomy between initiated measures and efforts that go through the legislature. And ultimately, the last response I would say is the only way that you could actually take away a choice from the voters is to vote no on this. This is simply offering the citizens of the state a chance to express their desires as to whether this is a good thing or not.
Senator Wilkie, a follow-up?
So it would take a majority vote to pass this, or?
Yes, just like any other constitutional amendment.
Any further questions for Senator Brown? I have one. Senator Brown, tell us about Amendment B in 96. What was the intent of Amendment B in 96? Because that was the first election I ever voted in.
You know, I think, as some of the other proponents indicated, and I wasn't really around or part of that effort at that time, but I think there was a sentiment that had arisen that there needed to be a little higher level of scrutiny for the legislature to take a look at these tax increases or to impose new taxes. And it was felt that if, you know, as we've already seen once this session, you know, I think the tourism tax, for example, that effort ultimately proved itself over the years and it received a pretty overwhelming support of the legislature. So by no means is this two-thirds requirement something that's impossible, but I think it does require those that want to move in that effort to maybe do so cautiously and do so with good reasons.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Yeah, Senator Wilkie.
Just from the standpoint of, you know, you're talking about different standards, you know, at the legislature, it requires a two-thirds vote if we're going to do any taxes. You know, do you see any difference between the fact that, you know, when we vote on something here, we are representatives of the people. We get input, and maybe, you know, it's okay to have that higher standard here. But if it gets referred to the vote of the people, everybody has their, you know, their vote, and perhaps it should be a majority vote.
You know, I can...
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually would say it's actually almost the opposite. I, as a legislator, am accountable to the constituents that sent me here. So I have I face a very real threat at the next election that if I'm not doing the will of my constituents, that I will not be back if I had chose to run again. One of the concerns that I have in the general public is you could have a special interest group that would decide they were going to raise the sales tax, for example, and they were going to dedicate that entire tax to themselves. And, you know, if I knew that I had or stood the chance of getting a $180 million payout, I'd probably be willing to invest several million dollars in terms of advertising to get that passed in the state. The problem is that short of a loose coalition that may sometimes form, you don't have the same level of opposition or organized opposition that would typically exist to something like that. So I almost think in terms of looking at this from an initiated measure standpoint, the danger is much higher because at least up here, there's an added level of accountability through the elections.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Senator Ernest, Mr. Lyons, would you like to come forward and answer a question on Amendment B from 96? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members, make sure that's on. I just got to pull up my language here real quick. On Article 11, Section 14, vote required to impose or increase taxes. The rate of taxation imposed by the state of South Dakota in regard to any tax may not be increased, and no new tax may be imposed by the state of South Dakota unless by consent of the people, by exercise of their right of initiative, or by two-thirds vote of all members elect of each branch of the legislature.
And so we would have seen that this last year on our ballot with the gathering of signatures to put the Medicare and school tax on
an initiated measure 15,
yes.
Mr. Chairman? Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, is there any... Oh, we have an amendment before us. We have J2FA. Does anyone wish to do anything with this? Senator Monroe.
Chairman, I move Amendment J2FA.
And do I have a motion? Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Omdahl. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Senate Joint Resolution Number 2 has been amended. Any further discussion and or action on Senate Joint Resolution Number 2? Senator Otten.
Move to do pass.
I have a motion to do pass Senate Joint Resolution Number 2. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Monroe. Any discussion of that motion, Senator Otten?
No, I just feel that this is a good resolution and that it is always best to have our spending really curtailed.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion of the do pass motion? Senator Omdahl.
Yeah, I think any time you're talking raising taxes, it's a serious issue, and I think this is a good bill. And so I will support it.
Thank you, Senator. With that, seeing no further discussion, all those in favor will say aye, those opposed will say nay, and the Secretary will call the roll.
Ewing?
Aye.
Kirkaby?
Aye.
Omdahl?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Welke?
No.
Monroe?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
6-1.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 2 has received a 6-1 vote and will move to the Senate floor. Oh, we have a title amendment.
Yes, motion.
Okay, we have a motion to amend the title, Senate Joint Resolution Number 2 with FTA, and a second by Otten. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Bill has been amended with a title amendment, so thank you. Is there anything else to come before the committee?